Hello, all. This weekend, I'm releasing two episodes, so double the magic, double the miracles. In this episode, I talk with Catherine Chadwick, who created The Art of Self-Craftsmanship, and who also experienced a healing that was so unexpected and so profound, her doctors were mystified as to what exactly happened. Catherine is a certified transformational coach, and what I love about all these conversations with so many different people is that there is a wealth of options when it comes to us wanting to change and transform our lives. Whether it's through therapy, bodywork, hiring a coach, there are so many options out there to rise up and out of our humdrum lives and create lives full of magic. Catherine's website will be in the episode show notes, so be sure to check it out. But I was really enchanted by the fact that at one time, she was hired to go through people's refrigerators and then counsel them about buying healthier food. I gulped when I heard that and thought about my fridge, which does have some questionable items in it. And then I got to thinking, why do I keep resisting that food is medicine? Hippocrates said, "Let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food." But Oscar Wilde said, "The only way to get rid of a temptation is to yield to it." And while I love Oscar Wilde, Hippocrates does have a point. With record levels of obesities and diabetes, we must begin to consider food as medicine, because our very lives depend on it. Somewhere in the middle, there must be a gracious balance between Hippocrates and Oscar Wilde, and I trust that each and every one of us will eventually find it. So now, my conversation with refrigerator inspector Catherine Chadwick.
By the time I was 23, I was the charge nurse of a small intensive care unit. And by the time I was 25, I was in a hip to breast back brace. My lumbar back had crumbled. L4 vertebrae had crumbled. It was a series of stress fractures. It was all in pieces. I couldn't use my left leg very much. I was walking with a walker. As a human being, I am a teacher. And what's fascinating about that also is that I have learned so much growing up, and I'm still growing up, right? We're all growing up all the time. And what I love about being me is the openness that I have discovered that is so beneficial for learning and being able to pass that wisdom on. And what's fascinating too is I was talking with a gal the other day, and she said information is only as good as the pass along. And isn't that what I find so true? And what's so beautiful about that is it opens up so many possibilities. So I believe that I am a spiritual being here with, you know, on the human plane, having a human experience. The biggest part of me is my spiritual part, my spiritual being. And what I love about that is learning to work with that energy, the universal energy, universal laws, energy principles. It's just fascinating. So I don't know if that's cocktail party material.
That's right. I would love to meet someone at a cocktail party with maybe a Manhattan straight up, even though I don't really drink anymore, and say, "Oh, who are you?" and then get that answer. That's just so profound and amazing.
Hi,
do always ask this follow-up question, not always, but sometimes, you know, were there instances in your childhood where, you know, they kind of formed you or affected you in a way to where you've evolved to where you are now, mm-hmm. To where what you're teaching and being a teacher and being present with people?
Mm-hmm. Well, isn't that the key? I think the being present. The more we can each live in the present moment, that's where the power is. Because when we're living in the past or worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow, we're wasting our time. And I believe I had a real advantage growing up in that I spent a tremendous amount of time outside. I grew up on a farm in upstate New York, and a beautiful area, rural area. And just understanding at a very young age that I was part of nature too, and loving, you know, feeling the wind on my face and the sun and all of it. And what's fascinating about that is really recognizing that everything has a cycle, and nature is very cyclical, and specificity is important as well. Because if you're planting those cucumber seeds, that's what you're going to get, right? So, and it's important, I believe, to understand all of that and embody it. And so I love being a part of nature. I quite often think of myself as being the water. The water isn't waiting for those rocks to get out of the way, right? There is a way that we maneuver through life, and understanding about the energy of life, and also understanding that we have choices, is a huge part of the awakening, I believe. And am I able to be awake all the time? No. You know, this human part of us draws us in to some of the things that we were taught growing up and that we experienced. And we have a tendency, I think, to get hung up a little bit on those sometimes. But when we are very specific as far as being intentional as to what it is we want to learn, what we want to be open to, what our purpose is, what our mission is, basically, and honoring that and understanding what our strong suits are, it's just like, oh my gosh, how fun is this? It really gets to be, you know, a fun adventure.
And I think it's really lovely that you brought in the cycles, mm-hmm. because I think it's a good reminder for those of us who grew up in cities or didn't have, I think, the huge advantage of growing up on a farm or in the woods or in a nature space, that, you know, cycles govern our lives. And whether it's the cycle of our breath, inhalation and exhalation, and or the cycle of the seasons, you know, there's always, when you think about inhaling, you're inhaling and bringing a lot in, you're bringing in life and vitality. Yeah. And then when you're exhaling, everything's going out. And that's kind of like the year, right? Spring and summer are a great inhalation. Fall and winter are an exhalation, like a time of rest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I learned this recently, but I learned about still point. So that point when you inhale and you can pause for a moment, mm-hmm. and that there's a universe in that pause. And then when you exhale, you wait a beat, and there's a universe there as well. So what are you creating? And I thought to myself, oh my gosh, like the year has that as well. Mm-hmm. You know, there's like a great wait, right? Or a beat before spring starts. And then in the deepest of winter, maybe those are the equinoxes, you know, when people are gearing up to, or when nature is gearing up, but people probably too, gearing up to really feel that switch in what's going on in the world, or what could potential, because there's a lot of potential in winter as well. I don't think people understand that, maybe even more than in spring. But people tend not to think that. So what a huge gift growing up around nature and being able to witness those cycles and then bring them into your life and embody them. I think that's so beautiful.
Well, what's fascinating is, and I'm certainly not the first one to come up with this concept, but I really believe that if we can think of our mind as being like a garden, and what thought seeds are you planting? Because every thought, every emotion, every action has an energetic value to it. And everything is always perpetually in motion. And if you're planting weed seeds, you're not going to get those beautiful sunflowers. And the simplicity of that, I think, is important for people to understand. In fact, I've started a kids program, which I just love, as part of the Sunshine Quotient project. And the theory is your mind is like a garden. What thought seeds are you planting? And also asking children to choose a couple of words each day to understand the power of I am. And, you know, today I am curious. Today I am kind. Today I am bold, you know, or whatever it is they choose for themselves. And to start getting them into the practice of realizing that they are a part of nature and they do have control over their thoughts. And I also teach about the vagus nerve, which is interesting because I think it's important for people to understand that we have 12 pair of cranial nerves, and the vagus nerve is cranial nerve number 10. And the reason it's so important for people to be aware of this is when you take in that deep breath, you're also engaging your vagus nerve, which invites the calming side of your nervous system to engage. And the vagus nerve is connected to almost every organ in your body. And so understanding the power of engaging that vagus nerve, understanding about engaging the calming side of your nervous system, and also incorporating the beauty of visualization and using that age-old concept of visualizing breathing in the light. And when you feel that you're bringing in the light and it's filling every little crease and crevice of you, and you feel that you're actually glowing from the inside out, and also understand that you're encouraging yourself to self-regulate in the event that you need to or want to. When people start to get anxious, that's why the breath is so wonderful to know about and be in tune with, because we don't need anything other than ourselves. And so the Sunshine Quotient is very dear to me, and it's the basis of a lot of what I do. And it's also fun. I think life is supposed to be fun. And I think it's important to incorporate fun in life, because when you think about we're vibrational beings, what we want is not in those lower vibrations. And we do get a lot of information that we can use, but staying down in those lower vibrations doesn't really serve us well on any level as far as being able to move forward health-wise. Or on health-wise on any level.
My second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household, or what did that look like for you? And did it inform how you later moved in the world?
That's an interesting question, and I would say, you know, we always said grace before a meal. We typically went to church on Sundays, and I didn't really like it much. It was a small congregational church. You know, we would get dressed up a little bit and go to church, and it seems like the minister was always angry, and I'm like, I don't know what this is about. You know, it doesn't feel good to me. And then we, you know, we would leave and go outside, and it was always so a relief to get back outside, right? And so, and then people kind of went off in their little cliques, and It didn't resonate with me. I didn't like it. It wasn't something I wanted to really move forward with. And when I was 8, my father sold the farm and we moved. And my mom wanted me to join the youth group at a church that they had joined there. And I really was very resistant to it. I didn't want to be part of it. I was very much into playing sports, and that was my thing. But I said, okay, I will go and I'll check it out. And so I did go. And the woman that was leading the youth group started talking about sex education and using frogs as an example. And I'm like, oh, no. I went home and I said, all right, that's it. I am so done with this, right? So that got to be a real contest of wills for about the next year. We're leaving for church. I'm not going. We're leaving for church. I'm not going. And it was really a point of contention. And when I went to college, what was interesting is that a phys ed class and a religious class, a religion class, were both requirements as part of my curriculum. And I had gone to Alfred University, which at that time was the number one college for nursing in New York State, which is why I was there. And I waited until last semester, senior year, to take this requirement. And it was a fabulous course that was taught by a retired Episcopalian minister. I believe he was in his 70s at the time. And it was the history of religion, which was fascinating. And I believe that religion, all religions, are interpretations of the universal energy from different perspectives. And, you know, and there's an element of commonality in many of them. And I just found that to be highly interesting. And I believe absolutely in the universal energy. We don't breathe ourselves. We don't make our hearts beat on our own. You know, we're all breathing in this universal energy. So let's learn how to work with it. And what you want to call it, that's totally up to you.
Yes, I love that answer. I also love the image of you as a kid just being so staunch and saying no, and just holding your ground and standing firm and saying, hey, no. I mean, I was just thinking when you were telling that story that I'm sure living on the farm, you'd seen plenty of frogs and what they were capable of. And so you're like, do we really need to talk about this? Is this like really a thing? And, but that's really a precious and funny story. I mean, I wasn't introduced to frogs until high school when we had to dissect them, or maybe it was toads. And I hated that class so much because I thought it was so useless and needless to kill all these animals for no reason.
Right. Because
what was the point? And who was going to remember this in a year anyway? Mm-hmm. But it was like some sort of weird complex of like this company just killing these animals and mailing them to schools all over the place. So morbid. I just think about all these things in my childhood that were so strange and demented and morbid. But as I said earlier, it was the 80s. So there was a lot that was kind of strange, including Aquanet for our hair. But, you know, I don't know if schools still do that, but it does seem kind of useless and needless to just kill again all these animals. Sorry for going a little dark there, but.
Oh, that's all right. But the beauty of it now is that with the technology and the ability to create, you know, 3D things out of almost anything, and the models that can be used now for anatomy and physiology and learning, you know, the different aspects of things, particularly the anatomy, and you can take things apart and see how they fit together. It's a huge improvement.
Absolutely. I mean, I was at the dentist getting years ago, getting a crown, And, you know, I had to wait 2 weeks for them to make it. And I said to them, isn't it going to be amazing when you can just have a 3D printer here and you can print it while the patient's here and then just put it in? And the dentist agreed with me and said, absolutely. You know, that's going to be a game changer for everybody. Mm-hmm. No longer will we have to wait weeks, you know, in pain while whatever goes on, whatever goes on. So there is a huge capacity for good stuff in this world with 3D printing. So I love that. I love that you just inserted that in. That was amazing. Well, I would love to talk about, you know, your work, and you have a podcast, and I'd love to just get an overview of what you're doing now in the world.
Well, what's interesting is by the time I was 23, I was the charge nurse of a small intensive care unit. And by the time I was 25, I was in a hip to breast back brace. My lumbar back had crumbled. L4 vertebrae had crumbled. It was a series of stress fractures. It was all in pieces. I couldn't use my left leg very much. I was walking with a walker. And what's fascinating is I had a beautiful repair at the Mayo Clinic. And my prescription was to wear this brace for a year and to walk at least 1 mile a day for a year. And at that time, I was probably about 30 pounds less than you see me now. It was a very stressful existence. And that's kind of what it was, an existence. And I was back in Florida. I was sleeping on a friend's couch. I had lost everything because I hadn't been able to work. I lost my apartment, my car, everything. And I'm sleeping on a friend's couch. And I had two back braces, a couple of bikinis, and I didn't care what I looked like. I went to the beach every day, and I got up to 6 or 7, 8 miles a day. And it was fascinating. And it was a real turning point for me, which really informed most of the rest of what I've been studying and working on since then, because I could see where people coming into the unit had not been taking very good care of themselves for whatever reasons. Either they didn't know how, they didn't understand the implications of their lifestyle, they didn't understand what their diet, they didn't so much they did not understand. And here I am in the same boat. I've been working myself right into the ground. Every piece of equipment was way too heavy. And I was doing what I thought I was supposed to be doing, you know, rah, rah, work those extra shifts, work all those hours, you know, work yourself into the ground. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is absolutely no way to live. And I started listening to Wayne Dyer and Eckhart Tolle on cassette tapes and learning body-mind connection, which led to the body-mind-spirit connection. And I've been studying that pretty much ever since. And that informs how I work with people. And it's not what's good for me, it's what's good for you, right? You know, how can I help you embody and incorporate the tools, the wherewithal, the skills to help your self-development? Because the more self-sufficient we are on the physical plane, being connected with the physical energy, the universal energy, the energy principles, it's all in quantum physics, and all of this is it's all connected. And the more we understand that, the more fun everything is. Started You've Got Nurse, which started out as a wellness educational and supervisory capacity, working with people in their homes and teaching them to be self-sufficient, collaborating with other agencies for different services, because not everybody was in need or wanted the, you know, typical cookie cutter serving of home care. And I believe that when people understand more about how they operate, they're more willing to stick to their decisions. And so I would go to people's homes and, you know, have an interview with them to see if I would be able to help them, if that, if anything I would be able to provide would be of value to them. And we would talk for a bit, and I'd say, okay, now I'm going to go look in your refrigerator and your bathroom cabinets. And they go, but do you know how much information is in that refrigerator and in those bathroom cabinets, right? And it's like, you know, and I laugh at myself too, right? You know, often, you know, okay, do I really need this in here? No. Is it useful? If it has a use, it stays. And if it was just kind of on a whim and whatnot, no, I don't need it. It's gone, right? And what's fascinating is how we show up every day is really indicative of how our cells are operating too.
That's really interesting. I usually crave things. So like I woke up this morning and I thought, oh, I'm craving a butternut squash curry soup today. You know, nice. Something really warming and delicious. And I don't have a bad diet, although since I've moved home, my mom eats so much candy and ice cream. And I just look at her and I literally can't believe the amount of sugar that goes in that body. But I've been having some health issues and I just, you know, I gave up alcohol. I have given up caffeine mostly, except for some matcha every once in a while. And then sugar. I've mostly, I think, given up sugar. But yes, it is so important. Thank you for bringing that up about what's in our fridge. What are we feeding our bodies? What are we putting in our bodies? Because, you know, I'm sure everybody's heard this, but food is medicine. It is literal medicine. So if you're eating a ton of sugar or drinking a ton of alcohol, what do you think that's doing to your body? Mm-hmm. And it's so important. You can start so simply with the idea that food is medicine. What are you putting in? Because it's going to affect everything. So thanks for bringing that up.
And also, what you're thinking influences what you choose to eat.
It is really funny because some days I'll walk around, I'll be like, oh God, I really want some parsley. Oh my God, how can I get some parsley? Oh, go to the store and buy some parsley. Or, you know, last week I was thinking broccoli. Oh, I'm dreaming of broccoli. And, you know, sometimes on a whim, I'll look up online, what does craving parsley mean? And then I can see all the things that my body, because my body really tells me, hey, you need this. Make it or include it. And so sometimes in the mornings I make a really yummy sweet potato hash with, you know, maybe some fresh parsley in there and, you know, some sort of protein to like just make it delicious. I'm sort of trying to go dairy free, although that's hit and miss, but you know, I'm making slow movements in the direction of just really honoring my body and trying to be more aware of how I'm feeding myself, right? Not just with food, but with everything, you know?
We're in this physical body and it's our vehicle at the moment. And when you think of it as a vehicle, you know, some run on diesel, some run, you know, really require high tests. Some of them are electrical now. And the same diet doesn't work for everybody across the board. And it is important to pay attention and realize what your body is asking for and how can you best actually serve it? How can you best actually serve yourself? Because when we don't feel well, we're not as productive, we're not happy, we're not, you know, and when you look around, oh my gosh, there are an awful lot of folks out there that aren't feeling very good.
It's so true. And when I go to the gym, I, you know, I see all these people working out, but I think to myself, first of all, you must know that I envy the young because I know they're going out there and eating like, I don't know, microwave meals or drinking beers after work, you know, like I used to do. I used to have this life and, you know, it's all caught up with me. But also I think sometimes when we're asked to change our diets or be more mindful about what we eat, it's the universe saying, hey, this needs to change because you have work to do or different things to do or things to engage in. And we need you to be healthy to do it or fresh or clean or get rid of your trauma or whatever that looks like. And so it's not fun. It's not easy as you're watching everybody stuff that amazing pizza in their faces. Does kind of suck a little bit, but I'm hoping, you know, with this journey that I'll start feeling more centered and more grounded and better.
Well, I do understand what you're saying. And I think it's important to have that awareness, which will serve you. Absolutely. I think it's also important for people to know that the research shows that over 90% of human health conditions and illnesses are lifestyle induced. And so our health is really our responsibility. How we choose to think is our responsibility. I've started the hashtag of Ultimate Mind Diet. If you Google mind diet, you get a lot of nutritional information, which is all well and good. It's really the thoughts that are, you know, you are your own showrunner. And it's your thoughts that are influencing what you choose to eat. So getting back to that concept, your mind is like a garden. What thought seeds are you planting? Think about what you want to be eating on a nutritional level that serves your body. And it makes a huge difference when you put all of these pieces together. It's almost like as we're on this journey of self-discovery, it's almost like a puzzle. And you pick up a different piece here and you pick up a different piece there. And then, oh my gosh, one day, two pieces fit together.
And I think it's so important to remember that this kind of journey does not happen in like 2 weeks, snap of the fingers. This is something that, you know, maybe you can like say how you, when you start it, you write down how you feel and then maybe go revisit that entry 3 months later. Mm-hmm. And you say, okay, what's different? And then maybe 3 months after that, because it's going to be, you know, your body kind of has to unlearn, you know, its cravings and its trauma responses to what you've been eating and what have you. And, you know, I used to, as a child, you know, due to the trauma and stuff happening in my life, just eat and eat and eat. Mm-hmm. So, because it made me feel, I got kind of a food coma or soporific, you know, and I would just go to sleep. And I remember being in college and doing this, just like stuffing my face and so that I could go to sleep. So I didn't have to deal or think about or incorporate what had happened to me into my body. And, you know, it's just recently that I realized that I've been using food as a kind of a, I don't know, to make me not face what has to be dealt with. And so I've also been really careful with my portions, but also, you know, what I'm putting in my body as well. There's a lot of weeping and sorrow. I've also started meditation and did not understand that meditation could make you just weep for no reason. Just like start weeping. But it also feels cleansing and it feels peaceful. You know, there's something peaceful about it because it feels like it's all part and parcel of this package of healing that's going on. And it's really beautiful. It's challenging. It's hard. It hurts sometimes, but it's beautiful.
Well, the beauty of it also is the meditation is a beautiful practice to cultivate. And it's like everything else, it's always evolving. And we get so much information by doing it. And as we, I guess that word surrender comes to mind, and surrender is not giving up, it's surrendering the resistance to being a part of this universal energy. And there's so much information in that that we can use. And so opening ourselves up to that practice and being as mindful as we can be really is a joyous existence. Because when you can appreciate the moments, not everything is, you know, winning the Emmy, right? When you think of all the fun that could actually be incorporated into all the steps required to getting that Emmy, just like, oh my gosh, all the people you met, all the fun things that you did, all those emotions that you felt, all of the, it's all a process. Every day is a process. Everything is a process. The other thing I believe that's important for people to realize too, and I love the research because with the expansion of the technology, the research is exploding as well, right? And we have so much more information at our fingertips without doing the meditation. But the real prize is what we get through meditating, and because that's how we actually empower ourselves. But I do believe that it's important to pay heed to some of the information, because the research shows that the average lifespan of an emotion is 90 seconds or less. And when you think about that, it's just like, wow, okay, why am I thinking about this 3 days later? And also the emotions are, you know, our body reacts to these emotions with these chemical cocktail reactions. And when we're living with stress hormones being at the forefront most of the time, on a cellular level, it's destructive. Not only is it destructive on the thought process, but it's also destructive on a physical level as well.
Absolutely. And I just think about how we can start so very simply with what we put in our mouths.
It's a fabulous start, right?
Anything that you'd like to share, some seminal moment in your life that was magical to you or maybe miraculous?
Well, what I think is that developing the ability to look at things from different perspectives opens up many miracles, because I do believe that there's a gift in everything. And it's also very much about how you look at it. That whole scenario that I mentioned to you about, you know, my back falling apart. Oh my gosh, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, one of the best things, right? And it turned out to be a beautiful turning point. It did not feel good at the time, right? But look how it has really informed so much of what I do and what I choose to study and how I choose to work with people. And I've been working with quite a few people with health conditions, and this whole perspective of looking at it, at their diagnosis as not a gift, but a huge piece of information and an opportunity to make changes. And it is amazing the power that we have within us and the miraculous recoveries, the miraculous turning points that some of these people are experiencing. And I can provide the tools and the, you know, the information and the encouragement and the arena for safe conversation. But they're the ones that discover how powerful they are, because they're the ones that are actually doing the work. And I think that's a miracle every day. I love it. I love being able to help people empower themselves. I don't agree with the concept that, you know, I empower women over 40 or whatever it is. I don't do the empowering. I can be a role model. I can be a wonderful example. I can give people information and tools and examples and, you know, things that they can use, but they're the ones that are empowering themselves. And I think that's a miracle. The miracle of self-discovery, I believe, is now.
I wanted to just go back based on what you're saying and these recoveries. And I'm so interested. This is just for my own edification, because you've got me thinking about fridges and what people keep in them. Did you ever open a fridge and think, oh my gosh, this what is happening here?
Oh, absolutely. You know, for example, I was at this one woman's house. This was quite a long time ago. And definitely she had some health issues going on. And I opened her refrigerator and I was like, oh, my goodness, she's poisoning herself with the amount of sugar and the amount of processed foods. There wasn't, I don't think there was one natural thing in there. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. All right. So what's interesting about getting that kind of information, though, is it informs what the education can be, right? If you turn yourself around, you have 360 different possibilities of perspectives and from different vantage points of which you can gain information and be able to evaluate yourself. I believe I like to use the idea of becoming friends with and cultivating your curious observer. In some arenas, it's called the witness. And I like the word curious. It has a little bit of mischief to it. And when you're evaluating what it is that you're doing and getting information as to how you can do things better, or, oh my gosh, I would totally do that again. When you look at yourself with curiosity and that little bit of mischief, it takes some of the emotional sting out of the self-judgment. It's less self-judgmental than being the stern evaluator, right?
I'm a huge fan of being as mischievous as possible at the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. Words to live by.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah. I absolutely agree with that. It's fun.
So much for listening and spending time with my guest and I this week. I am very grateful for each and every one of you, and thank you to Catherine for coming on the show. There will be a link to Catherine's website as well as to her Instagram, Catherine Chadwick Consulting. She's such a dynamic, gracious, and compassionate person, and she's changing the world one human being at a time. Meredith Maletti in Aftertaste, a novel in 5 courses, said, "As a cook, I generally believe that you can tell a lot about people by what they keep in their refrigerators, what comforts them, what they need to have on hand to sustain them. Bon Appetit magazine publishes an interview with a different famous person each month, and often the interviewer will ask the celebrity to name 3 things that can always be found in his or her refrigerator. The answers are generally too finely crafted to be believable. A bottle of Stoli, fresh raspberries and beluga caviar, or San Pellegrino, fresh figs and key limes. And really, are we the kind of people that keep those kinds of things in our fridges? My answer would be brown rice tortillas, soup, and this delicious turmeric juice I make with a little ginger and coconut water. Boring, but also healthy. So now you're thinking, I know a little bit more about Kirsten than I probably want to. So this is the perfect time for me to say, thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Catherine, and remember that food is medicine. And each and every time you create a meal, do it mindfully and with love, knowing that every single bite will taste that much better. See you tomorrow for the very next episode of the podcast. And until then, I hope your lives are filled with very clean refrigerators, delicious meals, and good friends to break bread with.